Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Tonight, and we are going to be interviewing Daniel Rappaport from Pazaria Productions, and I'm also doing an introduction on what has caused some tension in the show lately, because I feel that our show is taking the wrong direction, and I would like to clarify those things. So far we only have Daniel on the line, and pretty soon Don will be coming in. So, one moment. Under Barack Obama, there were several accomplishments that many conservatives overlook. Part of the problem with the political vitriol in this country is each side who is adamant about their own belief system, what they do is they only strengthen their argument by only looking at facts that endorse their belief system. So some of the tensions in the show that were created last week and the week before were from John's insistence that his QAnon theory is absolutely correct, that we are moving from darkness to light with the administration of Donald Trump, who doesn't possess any Christian values but somehow embraces them by his cohorts. And these particular divisive thoughts are what's destroying the show, because we only have a few co-hosts left and some very useful guests that are using critical thinking skills. For example, when bringing up a certain policy decision or a policy idea, one person like Ben from Washington State will cite information that's correct, and then he will endorse his belief system by doing that. For example, last week he brought up a bill that his governor signed that eliminated residential construction, which affected his job directly. So on our particular radio show, which is called Political Gravity, we don't mind differing thoughts as long as there's a constructive viewpoint. But if you're just saying that Donald Trump's cleaning out the deep state and that everybody in the Democratic Party are, as John would state, baby killers and believe in the system of human trafficking, it's bullshit. Some Democratic senator from South Dakota possesses none of those values. So I'm going to spend 5 minutes of the show talking about what Barack Obama did in his 8 years in office. Then I'm going to pull my co-hosts in, and we're going to talk to Daniel about his production company, his experience with entertainment, which is one thing John criticizes. And Wade said he'd be calling in too, and he's had experience both with Daniel and acting in South Korea. So under the administration of Barack Obama, the high school graduation rate went up to 83% nationwide, which was the highest it's ever been. There was 82 months of consecutive job growth. A rover landed on Mars. The federal prison population dropped. Homeless veterans dropped by half, they went down by 47%, but now I think it's up again. Barack Obama had nuclear summits annually with several countries, and each year, the countries that participated got closer to security agreements, and the result after 8 years of an Obama administration is that 16 countries gave up their uranium. It was also ruled domestically that credit cards could not raise your interest rate without your consent or disclosing that to us. They also outlawed discrimination in the workplace entirely for I'm saying it wrong, Daniel can correct me. But I'm sure there's still some companies that discriminate, but at least federally it's against the law. Foreign oil reduced the dependence on it, and we started producing more domestic oil. Barack Obama and the military seized Bin Laden's library while in Pakistan, and there's public access to documents that Bin Laden possessed. Barack Obama started an organization within the government in which he nominated the first chief of technology, someone to oversee technological problems. He also coordinated with international bodies and in other countries to wipe out Syrian chemicals and get them removed as good as they can from Syria during the war. He banned U.S. torture through an executive order. He created a U.S. embassy in Cuba for the first time. He increased mental health care funding immensely. He was the very first president in the history of the country to release visitor records of the White House log by log, week by week, year by year. He was the first president to have the FDA regulate tobacco and say exactly what they were putting in the cigarettes. The deficit went from 9% to 3%. Banks that were borrowing against the federal government had to take stress tests and had to report quarterly so they weren't ripping people off. He shut down for-profit colleges that were trying to solicit people for degrees but weren't really worth their weight in paper, and one of those was Trump University. He shut down all black sites, CIA black sites overseas, and stopped that form of torture and interrogation. He lifted the secrecy order on caskets of dead soldiers coming home, and he paid each family money to meet their child's dead body at the airport. He saved money on Medicare and expanded health care for all, as we all know. And he also saved the auto industry, renewed GM, and now they're successful and no longer dependent on the government. So with that, thank you for calling in, Don. You're not on the air yet. I'm going to have Daniel talk now, and he can choose. First, he may choose to address the Trump administration and perceptions that he thinks is wrong, as he's exhibited on Facebook among friends, or he could first talk about his production company as he chooses. Good evening, Daniel. Hello. How are you doing tonight? And thank you for calling in.
Hi, Jane. I'm great. Long time no talk to. And I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And to ask your question, just to clarify, and it gets very, very difficult. They're always adding letters. I don't even know what the latest letters are, but it's technically LGBTQ, which essentially stands for, I think, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer. And then there are even more letters. It just keeps getting longer and longer.
I think I would have said it right, but I worked 12 hours and I just stumbled over my speech, basically. Thank you for clarifying that.
That's what I did. No problem. And then you were very gracious in offering me the chance to go ahead and choose what I want to talk about first. And actually, I will not talk about Bizarria Productions first. I will talk about perhaps the government or Donald Trump. But I have a question for you. Do you have any, based on what you saw in the conversation, and I can pull it up, it might just take a moment, but did you have any like specific questions for me with regard to anything I said?
Well, I liked how in a polite way, you were confrontational with one of our co-hosts, Wade, because it seemed to me on Rose's, when she put that post up on Howard Stern, and everybody knows Howard Stern has a big mouth, and it's going to say exactly how he feels, but I liked how the fact that you posted the Wikipedia link to the Russian interference, because a lot of people from the organization I just mentioned, QAnon, they'll just kind of deny the whole thing and say there was no Russian interference at all. But what they're talking about is the relationship of Donald Trump to those Russian hackers. Like some of them were like, it was like a name like Gucci 2.0 or something like that. But they did infiltrate all the Facebook ads, and even Mark Zuckerberg admitted that. And they did persuade voters who couldn't make their mind up. So you could start there, and then I would also just like to know fundamentally, besides Trump's personality, what exactly are your, what's your main beef with him?
Oh, where do I begin? it's interesting. So when he first, I definitely was not happy when he first got elected, and I can't remember if it was just right after he got elected or on the campaign trail, way back when, you know, give or take about 4 years ago. Like, sure, he was coming on strong. He had some crazy, wacky ideas and whatnot. And then he has to go on the air and make fun of someone who's disabled. And at that point, I just kind of lost all, just 100% all respect for him. You know, and then, of course, it started coming out that a large part of his wealth and what he has, you know, a lot of it came from his parents, and, you know, just more and more that he's a spoiled child, and he actually didn't, I guess, technically, financially build a lot of what his empire had and represented, and you know, it just all came falling apart as time went on. So, but as more specifically with regard to the Russian in investigation, I think that
there's a lot to it, but mainly it was just the fact that it was infiltrating and they hacked the DNC and all those other things.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I was going to say. It's my understanding that he has a lot of financial interest in Russia. I don't know if it's property. I don't know if it's stocks. I'm not exactly sure, Jane. Maybe you know. But I don't know. I saw kind of a video the other day that he was with Kim Jong-un at a Starbucks, presumably at Trump Tower. They were, maybe folks who are listening, maybe you saw this, and they were just having a good old time talking back and forth. And, of course, one could easily imagine him having similar meetings, perhaps copious ones, with Putin, you know. So if he has one could very easily imagine that if he's hanging around with these kinds of people, you know, that sure. I mean, why not try and get Russia to infiltrate the election? It makes logical sense.
Yeah, I think one thing that he wanted to do is he wanted to open up a hotel chain starting in Moscow. He also had dirty dealings with the international beauty pageants. And the main thing is, I guess, I don't think he has a good acumen for how government policies and international relationships are supposed to work. And I could see his face being drawn in the last 2 weeks with this coronavirus, which nobody can really have any control over, and how his perception only revolves around economic numbers and success. And he can't even get past that, like the big picture meaning in life. Like, this is completely out of control
yeah.
for anybody, and he's worried about numbers. And I just don't think, in his mind, he's never moved past that. Like, even
yeah.
and if he is embracing the Christian party, then why is money everything? Because Jesus preached the opposite.
Yeah.
Jesus
yeah.
preached, don't worry about, remember, well, you grew up Jewish, but Jesus had a parable, look at the birds in the air, they're not worried about how they're clothed. And there's a parable about don't worry about what you'll eat or how you're clothed, just the God will take care of it. And Trump just can't get
yeah.
past the idea of economic sabotage, even if it's a virus or pandemic. So, I mean, everybody has commonalities on why they don't like Donald Trump, but basically
yeah.
it all boils down to the way he responds to things and how he treats people.
Definitely. Yeah.
And by the way,
yeah,
Wade is on
I
the line, and Don, so why don't we bring
hi.
Them in quick, and then you can talk about your company in a few minutes. Hi,
sure.
Don. Thanks for calling in a timely manner.
Hey, Jane. No, thanks for reminding me or... a lot has been going on at the house, and it's good and bad. So this pandemic, the self-quarantining, being together all the time, it's good and bad. And I try to see the good in it all. But hi, what's his name, Dan?
Dan?
Hello, sir. How are you? Yeah.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
I live by myself. So it's all good. I work from home anyway.
Well,
can
I just tell Don briefly how we know you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Wade and I were roommates in a condo, but we also attended the same church in Hollywood called Hollywood Presbyterian. And when Wade got a condo, he invited 3 to 4 friends to move in with him, and Daniel was one of them. And that's back
yeah.
when Lauren was 3 years old.
Oh, my
cool.
God.
That's a long time
so
ago.
So, Don, and by the way, Daniel, I know Don from working at the L.A. Times. So, and
oh,
that
cool.
was in 1987 and 1988.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Here's Wade. Cool. Let's say hi to Wade. 1 second.
Hi,
hey,
Wade.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Daniel.
How are you?
Hey, Don and Jane. Doing all right?
Yeah, we're interested to hear. Daniel's already shared some of his... I asked him specifically to share some of his political beliefs because it's not that I always feel outnumbered on the show, but I want like a perspective from someone who is not jaded by politics and just sees the world how they see it, because I think Daniel has a good command on what his perception is on Donald
oh.
Trump. But on the other hand, he's not like a lobbyist in Washington. Like he doesn't have an agenda.
No,
yeah.
not real, not at all. Actually, I'm about as far from that as you can. Even though I do have an, as you said, epic fantasy entertainment company that I am growing in terms of at least any kind of lobbying agenda where Washington is concerned, I don't have that. And even if my company grows, I don't really see how I would fit in or even try and do that. So no, yeah, I don't have any agenda at all.
Great. So, Wade, we're going to segue, since Daniel's on the title, we're going to start with his production company, and then any of us
sure.
can move into a different direction once he does that presentation.
Yeah, I figured that would be the plan, sure.
Cool.
So
no,
why don't you start with the infancy of your program, and we've had Daniel on the air twice in the last 5 years. And this is his third visit.
Is it? Wow.
So go ahead, Daniel. Why don't you tell us about your production company?
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate having the floor. And definitely. I'll try and make this, I guess, as brief as I can. But it's definitely grown since the last time I've been on the air. The name of the company is called Pizzaria Productions. Jane, you were gracious enough to feature me in your kind of advertising and marketing for the show. My graphics are center stage, which is great. On one of the main graphics, you might see a fairy. She is teaching magic to to a little frog. His name is Spark the Flying Frog. And that image is from actually a project we saw, Apple Interactive Book, called The Legend of the Lost Rose. I have a trilogy of three books, actually. It would be the Spell Book, which is free, Apple Interactive Book. I would have Spark the Flying Frog, which is how Spark was born and where he came from. And then The Legend of the Lost Rose, which continues the story. The mission statement, I should also say, just while I'm on products, really briefly, with regard to the free book, the Spell Book, there's also a music soundtrack that goes with it that's integrated into the book that is also separate. You can either purchase it or it's also available for streaming on things like iTunes and Spotify, or it's now Apple Music, I guess. So,
if we purchase it and we don't have an iPad, is there a way to look at it?
As far as the books, no. The music, yes. I'm definitely working on that. In terms of anything that would be something that you could look at with regard to my company that does not require any Apple devices, I do have a YouTube channel, actually, that is linkable right off my website. It's called The Magical BTS, which stands for Magical Behind the Scenes. And with that, it's a very new show. I'm involving a little bit of comedy. But with that show, actually, I'm going to behind the scenes look as far as how I do what I do with regard to Pizarro Productions. And one of the unique things I'm bringing to the table is that I'm integrating magic into it, magic illusionism. So, the first episode I just got through shooting, and it's in the can. It'll be online soon. Anyhow, it's going to talk about money. So this magic trick I'm going to present very much revolves around money. So I presented, it looks like it's going to be in the beginning of the episode. However, because it's an educational program, I definitely also want to teach how the magic trick was done. However, in order to find out how that was done, you have to watch the next episode, right? So when I say money, I'm definitely talking about, just finances, how finances work with a company, what you need to start, those kinds of things. So, wealth building, wealth creation, those kinds of things. I also just want to mention the mission statement of the company, and that is everything that a guest would see, eat, buy, touch, do, wear, and so on, all has to do with your own personal adventure within our world. So everything is integrated in that sense. So, and just really briefly, another project that is on the horizon that we're working on right now, actually. We really want to try and look at innovation as much as possible, integrating that into the company. So we're looking at doing an augmented reality presentation of William Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. So that is in production now. So stay tuned for that.
Wow.
So that's Pizarro. That's Pizarro Productions.
I love Shakespeare.
For sure.
Wade, do you have something to contribute?
Oh, yeah, I've seen there's some great artwork, and so should check it out. We'll go to his web page and his blog. He's got a blog, and I think there's several sites I've seen. But
I've
just
been going on the blog
because
you've
you
been sending
feel.
More notifications.
Would I be able to talk about the blog a little bit?
Sure, that's
cool.
Fine, and then we're going to segue back into whatever all four of us decide.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, so the blog is also a little bit on the new side. Wade, thank you so much for your positive comments. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
So as far as the blog, it's called The Magical World of Pizarro Productions. And kind of the idea behind that is more often than not, well, the impetus of it was just to showcase what I'm doing with the company kind of every 2-3 days or so, just put out a post about, maybe a piece of art or a cool project or the video, a place to showcase maybe a new video from the Magical BTS. Something that, flows perhaps maybe a little bit better than just a website. Also definitely have the benefit of income from advertising. So it's a really great venue to put those entries into an email list to send out. It's just very easy and it flows very well. And I'm just going to say this about the blog, then we'll move on. With regard to my innovation that I like to integrate into the company, there are on the left-hand sidebar, there are links that actually link off to three. We're already exploring augmented reality, three augmented reality scenes within some of the various realms of of Fusaria Productions. So maybe go check out the blog, go check that out. Right now, the augmented reality, it's looking like it's only for iOS devices. Unfortunately, that's just how the design tools are working out. But, you know, that may change. It's with Adobe, and I'm sure they don't want to stick their Adobe Aero software with only iOS. But right now, that's what it is. But anyhow,
I have a question.
Yeah,
if I borrowed my friend's iPad, do I need a login to watch the first free book?
Website? Not at all. Actually, so with regard to iOS devices, there's something called Books or Apple Books. It should be just a default app that would come with the iOS software. It's really easy to spot. It's an orange icon with a white book on it, and you just tap that open in the search. If you look up the spell book by Daniel Rappaport, it should come right up, and you just it should say free. It should say free or get now or something like that. You just tap it, it downloads.
Sounds cool. Does anybody, Don, do you have any questions?
It works very similar to like the Google Play Store or something.
No, let him finish. You know, this is all Greek to me. So I'm fine. You can go explain that to the audience.
Okay. Don only knows about lobbying and local public policy decisions.
All I know, Dan, is that the internet is one of the most destructive things that human beings have ever had. And when you talk about...
Not according to my business.
Beg pardon?
Well, Don, you're not really on the internet that much.
Yeah,
it took you 10 years to get a Gmail.
Right.
Yeah, not according to my business and my numbers.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's a fun thing for a lot of people, and it's a great medium for people to be on to live constructs. But in terms of all of the books and games and things that are on it, it is. In my opinion, waste of time.
Well, actually, sir, I do have a point with regard to coronavirus right now. Thank God for the internet, because I was able to actually order some toilet paper, of which all the stores were out. So I ordered that toilet paper, and I went to pick it up at Walmart. And actually, something where I just scanned your phone, the thing, I didn't even have to talk to a human. Scan your phone, the thing opens, and I didn't have to touch anyone or anything but my package. So the internet saved my behind, literally.
Literally.
Well, yeah, Don.
Right.
Don, I think you're a little old school. Don was born in around 55, so he's always steered clear of the internet. But he has a very busy life outside the internet. He has grandkids, and he works with the Wausau Democratic Party. But one thing I want to say, which I know Dan and Wade would agree with me, is I've been on three different Zoom meetings this week with three different organizations I'm involved with. At first, I didn't like it very much, but now I'm starting to get the hang of it, and I like it.
Right.
Well, you've got the thing I want to mention. The thing I want to bring up is that being born that young, I'm trained in journalism and philosophy, psychology, and things like that. And during my college and life. So fake news is real in terms of the internet, because you've got everybody on. And everybody who can get on, most of those people don't deserve to be there. And
that's relevant. You're right, Don. That's relevant to our discussion we were talking about with QAnon, with all the boneheaded ideologies.
Exactly.
I think the other thing, though, because without the internet, there's a monopoly of who feeds us the information, and they give us a lot of bullshit too. Like, maybe I shouldn't say that. Like the whole thing with the Covington kids and stuff like that. You know, a lot of these established news organizations are feeding us a lot of junk. Like the Covington school kids it was a heinous thing that they did. And there's a lot of that, and thanks to the internet, we can hear, you know, thanks to the internet, it gets, that stuff gets debunked. And,
that's
you
not,
know, people are able
not
to.
What's the Covington kids? What's the Covington kids?
Yeah, thank you, Jane. I was curious to know myself.
They were just standing waiting for their bus, and they were, you know, being harassed by some protesters. And then this Native American went up to the kid and beating his drum. And the news point
we covered that on the show, but go ahead and explain.
Yeah, I don't think the media should be let off the hook for this. They made a big splash that these kids were being racist and horrible. And this boy, you know, because they made it seem like, oh, this boy that the was like staring down this drummer, and it's like the boy was like, you know, he didn't know what to do. So when the full video came out, they saw that the boys were approached, and you know, these were high school kids. They didn't know what to do. So there were people saying the school should be locked up and burnt down.
I think it would help if we knew not to be racist, but if it's talking about race, it would help to know who is what race, because unless we saw the video, we don't know.
I think
what happened, Daniel,
is that there was a Native guy playing a drum, and someone got pissed off, but the media only zoned in on the Native guy being treated like dirt, right, Wade?
He was never even treated like dirt. They were just standing there. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, either way, it shouldn't matter what the races are because, you know, nobody should be misrepresented regardless of race. But, okay, these were white kids.
No, sure.
And so the Native American goes up to them, and they're like this narrative of, oh, look at these racist white boys from this Catholic school. They were just standing there, and people were talking about how they should be burned up.
It just helps create a picture in my head. That way I can kind of see the story.
Sure.
That's all. That's the
one. I understand.
So I think let's just sum it up like this, Don, because you kind of opened up Pandora's box. The internet definitely does way more good than harm because, number one, you can send people emails and you can send them electronic greetings. You can pay your bills online. You can look up any on legitimate sites, any historical fact in an instant, like who was King of England in 1455. But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to politics, yes, there is a lot of problems. And that's why Russia was able to infiltrate our election.
Right, but you can still say that Christopher Columbus discovered America and how to make bombs, and who, you know, is going to be our president. This is the internet has installed a lot of instruments that are allow us to be infused with misinformation. And that
it's a tool like anything else. You can take a hammer and kill someone, and you can take a hammer and build a house. It's a tool.
Yeah.
Right.
Agree.
And building that house sometimes is a situation that do it yourself, you make mistakes. They don't give you enough information to build a house or cook a, you know, bake a pie or, you know,
that's
fix a car. It's part of being human, but it's not necessarily as good as a mechanic telling you how to change spark plugs. Or something.
Maybe the localism of depending on your mechanic. But also, my son watched a video on how to replace a motherboard, and he did it successfully without having to go to a shop and pay $500. But then you have people who are stalking kids on dating websites, and a 25-year-old guy might pick up a 14-year-old girl and take advantage of her more easily.
Let's put it this way. The internet is not going away anytime soon.
And that's the thing. That's the reason I work with Infosys, subsidiary of Microsoft. So I'm in it, but I am very much aware.
Don just got a job under an umbrella company of Bill Gates, which John would condemn.
and I would get I am not that far behind, but
right.
Because I'm dealing with terms and conditions, and when you deal with third party, fourth, fifth, all your information, I'm very aware of Switch and some of the other data. Everything is collected that you put on your internet, and that is taking away your freedom. And when I was young, I fought for
yeah.
freedom. I fought for individual freedom and justice for all. And I worked with I walked with Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug for women's rights. And those things are being taken away because people are being told that women don't have control of their bodies. I'm not completely for or against abortion. I've had quite a few of them, but I don't know
well,
if
don't
I...
Well, don't admit that on the air.
I don't want to admit...
Okay, let's not talk about people's life stories tonight, but I want to segue to another topic quickly. So one of the premises of QAnon is that, and Don, I just don't want you to spout out, but look back into the golden era of Hollywood. Now, QAnon says all of Hollywood is tied into dirty humanity, like everyone's a Harvey Weinstein. I fundamentally disagree because now you can sell a script on Netflix. You can almost get it independently produced. There's millions of production countries all over the country and world, and you don't need Hollywood anymore to get success. And plus,
yep.
Hollywood has provided a lot of happiness, even for people in my parents' generations who went to the movies during World War II and paid a nickel or a coffee can to get in the movie.
Hmm. Ooh, I have something to say on this because I'm in the entertainment company. Can I say something, please?
Sure.
Thank you. So anyhow, with regard to the internet taking away freedoms, what I want to say is with regard to Pizarro Productions, the internet or actually so many different entertainment companies out there, I mean, I can go on and on. There are so many out there that are just producing their own films and going right to the audience. The internet actually enables freedom with regard to getting content out there because it allows you to set up your own, what I'm going to call empire and infrastructure. Right, you can go. You can do your own marketing, your own advertising, your own content creation, your own everything. Everything that a studio can do, you can now do yourself. You know, and carve your own niche out there. You know, so yeah, that's what I.
And all you need is one viral video sometimes to be successful.
And tell her
because
why
I can't remember the name of the producer, but he discovered Justin Bieber on YouTube, I believe.
Dang, tell them why I moved to Reno. I was in the middle of Hollywood.
Your screenplay got stolen,
Among other things is that I saw how people left their kids on Hollywood and Vine and told them not to come home until they made themselves rich, their parents rich.
Wow.
This is a normal thing, pedophilia and all of the... xenophobia and women's raping and things like that.
But it has changed.
Commonplace. It has
now. Women like Reese Witherspoon and Charlize Theron, they're making their own movies. They're not answering to any men. It's changed, John.
It's a lot of hard work. I know firsthand. You know, you have to build it yourself. No celebrity just all of a sudden woke up and got rich overnight. Even celebrities have a hard time getting roles. You know, it's something you have to build. Hollywood is a difficult deal.
I agree, Don. All I'm trying to do is break the myth of that John sweeping ideology that everything is evil versus everything is good. Like there's a halfway point between all ideas and philosophy.
I usually don't agree with all or nothing.
I understand things have changed, you know, but I was grow up. I can't even say grow up. I was dealing right in the middle of the Harvey Weinsteins and the Epsteins and all the people who were doing things. And as I said, women were doing it too. So this is something that I grew up in, and I've got to understand the new nuances of the entertainment brand. You know, as I said, I grew up with Walter Cronkite and Dan Rather and those guys.
Sure.
They just say all, you know, the news is.
And there was some security in that. There was some trust and security with those news organizations back then.
Right, and now we've got people like Fox who are just one-sided, MSNBC. These people are just CNN. They're all on one side, and you can't.
Yeah.
The news. They're giving you news you can't trust. So I've got to develop I've got to let my guard down, so to speak, and develop a trust for some of the news associations that I grew up in,
right.
In the middle of grew up in. I worked for the LA Times. I worked for the Herald Examiner. I had to tell my editors, and they would look at me and they'd wonder why I would speak up. Because I had to tell them what was right and what I felt was wrong, and at that time, it was very, very difficult because they had their jobs. They had to do the things that their bosses told them, and me, I was looking at it from a totally different perspective because I was looking at the disadvantaged, those who were who were disenfranchised, the women, the blacks, the minorities, those who were disabled. I was looking at the news and the information from those perspectives, and those perspectives have still not necessarily always been incorporated or embellished in this new media that Dan is a part of. I do, you know, there's one screenplay that I had written that I was starting to write about the Tulsa riots in 1920. Now, that was the biggest killing of minorities, blacks, who had a successful Wall Street in Tulsa in the history of the United States. No one has made a movie, promulgated a book, or even said much about it. It was discouraged.
Okay. Yeah, you've mentioned that on the show, and I'm sorry that happened to you, but I have a question for Daniel since he's our featured guest. Compared to when you were first starting out, Daniel, with your ideas, and you and Wade both worked at Disneyland, I believe. I don't know if Wade did, but how do you feel that compares when you were promoting ideas to a major company to what you're doing now when you're just promoting your own ideas?
Well, that's you bring up a handful of things here that are kind of have to do with each other and don't have to do with each other at the same time. And I will absolutely explain. Yes, I've worked for the Walt Disney Company in several different capacities amongst several different lines of businesses. Wade, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you also worked at Disneyland in the costuming department. Shout out to you working on Fantasmic, which in my opinion is the best show ever to be produced ever. So it's awesome that he was part of that. But anyhow, in terms of working at Disney and presenting your ideas, and how it's like now, what I want to say is that if you are not a cast member of the Walt Disney Company, if you're not working for them, if you're just part of the general public and you send in ideas to them, their legal department will probably send it back to you and tell them that it's their longstanding policy that they cannot accept unsolicited ideas from the general public. If you have a film in particular and you want to get it made by Disney or anybody else, you have to have an agent. That's just how it works. That's just how Hollywood works.
Yep.
No agent, no film.
Exactly.
So anyhow, yeah. So then, with regard to being within the Walt Disney Company and presenting my ideas and whatnot, in terms of Pizarro Productions specifically, what I will say is that I'm not going to mention, for respect to the conversation and people on the air, I'm not going to mention the name of the property. What I will say is that Wade and I have a property that we have discussed for quite some time here that actually was, I ended up meeting Roy Disney, the nephew, actually when I went to CalArts, and I was not a cast member of the Walt Disney Company at that time. Anyway, I ended up in his office, talked to him, a very wonderful guy. He ended up referring me to the animation department. I took this property, got some art made, presented it to the animation department with a different colleague at the time. Wade was not there. The Walt Disney Company actually did go ahead and turn it down. It's not the end of the world. Stuff gets turned down in Hollywood all the time, obviously. However, but because I got to be friendly with you know, more or less the top guy there at the time, that's how I was able to even present. That is a very extraordinary and very unique situation that does not happen to everybody. More often than not, you have to have an agent. So, and what I will say is, as well, being a cast member at the Walt Disney Company, when I was working at the El Capitan Theater, I was initially hired in to just be part of the food team, basically with popcorn. I was a chef. Did the pizzas and pretzels, things like that. It was really cool. But as well, in terms of my ideas, they actually did have a box that said, please present your ideas. And they had forms there where you could actually go ahead and present your ideas. So that was cool. So I presented a lot of them. Walt Disney Company being the Walt Disney Company, all got shot down. Not all of them, actually. I ended up working in, I was a photographer, so that was really creative and really great, which was not part of my initial job description. I also worked in the capacity of, they have parties there. So the parties are themed to different films. So in terms of Cars, I actually got to work on some design for a party for the Cars film, which was really great. So I did get to be creative, which was really cool. Yeah, it was really, really cool. So I didn't bother presenting anything with regard to Zarya Productions while I was there, just because I've always felt it was a separate thing, a separate entity. Now that I've been fortunate enough to not have to be an employee anywhere, I'm focusing solely on my company, and it's growing like wildfire.
Great. And by the way, I did miss you by only a week when you moved to Florida. I was out there in December, and they said you had moved to Florida a week earlier. Florida?
Actually, yes, I really, really do. I live in a community called Celebration, which on purpose I moved here. It is created and built by the Walt Disney Company. Disney does not own it now because they don't want to be in the business of a town, I guess. It was created by Michael Eisner, who was looking at Walt Disney's Epcot project, not the theme park, but the city. And Epcot stands for the Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow. Walt Disney wanted a futuristic city that he said it was always going to be in a state of becoming, showcasing the latest technology. Part of it did come to fruition with regard to World Showcase in the Epcot theme park. He wanted he wanted kind of like a World Fair kind of idea. So that's what it is today. And so now we have the community. That's where I live. I live in an apartment here in Celebration. So it's great. I'm 10 minutes away from the Magic Kingdom, so yeah, I'm here as well.
Are you
gonna
try to work at the Magic Kingdom after the COVID virus?
I have no intention of working for Disney. No. I focus solely on my company, but my move here is also strategic in the sense that more or less you don't live in Celebration unless you like Disney. I want to go ahead and create live events, like themed events and things like this with Bizarre Productions, and so I have a captive audience.
That's great. Yeah. Don, I kind of cut you off before. Is there something you want to say now?
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I want to say something. I've had a lot of friends in Hollywood, and there were three celebrities who went to my church, actually. But Richard Karn, Faith Ford, and another guy named Pierre Moscarino, but most people don't know him. But we also had, you know how like in L.A. when you live there, there's always 2 degrees of separation between you and the next person? So
yeah.
There are ways that you can connect to people, but the only main reason I brought all this up, and I like Daniel's detailed story of one of the Disney relatives, is one of my friends, Yale, had 2 degrees of separation, too, with Conrad Hilton, one of the actually, she knew him, so I guess there's no degrees, but there are ways that you can get yourself promoted while living in Hollywood. It doesn't necessarily ensure automatic success, but at least if you have those connections, you can build upon them. And well, she actually knew several celebrities, but I just decided to mention that now. But what I was mainly trying to say is that Hollywood for me was not a bad thing, and I was never exploited by anyone. The owner, the CEO of Atlantic Entertainment, well, we hung out with him one night. He probably came the closest of trying to exploit me and my friend, but other than that, it was a good experience living in Hollywood from 87 to 91 and then moving back to L.A. in 99. So for me, it was a good experience. I wasn't exploited. I didn't get a screenplay stolen like Don. And I'm not just, like Wade was saying earlier, I'm not going to diss a whole industry just because someone has a bad political affiliation with it. Does anyone care to comment?
Yeah, it sounds wise, you know. I like to avoid a lot of all of, you know, that's emotional when people say, all of these people are bad, all of this group is bad. You know, that's where prejudice comes from. And yeah, definitely... I can't imagine all of Hollywood are bad, or all of any group, or except for maybe all of serial killers. They're all, anyone who's a serial killer is bad. But if you
I'm watching
like that,
actually. Wait, I'm watching a Netflix series right now that was produced by Charlize Theron and someone else. It's called Mindhunters. And it's where two FBI agents go around and interviewing real serial killers. Like, they were real serial killers in real life. And it's a really big hit because they're trying to find out why they did it. But that's off the topic. But what I wanted to say is that I did watch an interview today with Tom Hanks, and he is being interviewed by Harvey Weinstein. And a lot
right.
of people had wind of what Harvey Weinstein was doing, but they weren't directly a victim of Harvey Weinstein. And Tom
right.
Hanks was saying is that the industry was affected, but not everybody was plagued by people like him. They went on merrily with their careers and did fine.
Right.
So
sure.
it was just a small segment of those kind of people.
Yeah, I was actually going to say something similar to that, Jane, in the sense of if you find that you are involved in a particular political group, if it's affecting your Hollywood career, disassociate with yourself from that group and move on with your dreams if you believe strongly enough in them.
Right, and like I'm not trying to criticize the one host who's on the air a lot, but like John Podesta got invited to a spirit cooking party. And so did Lady Gaga.
What?
So now every
oh, wow.
time my friend, who's been a co-host for years, brings up those people, he automatically associates them with Satanists. And I feel like the credibility of the show is going down because of those types of literal associations. Like just think,
right.
let's say a poor woman in 1975 had an abortion because she felt like she didn't have any chance, that, like, he'd even incriminate that person. And I've seen a massive personality change in this person, and I don't know what to do about it. It's gotten worse and worse. And Don made a good point tonight when I was talking to him off the air, as he said, maybe in desperate times like these, people, they just go back to some kind of strange fundamental belief to make themselves feel more secure. Like, they
just
feel like they're
the
unhinged.
Yeah,
but I just don't understand why people think like this.
Right.
Now, one thing
no,
I want to mention, I want everybody's opinion. Like, I felt like one reason Bernie Sanders jumped out of the race is because he couldn't really campaign effectively anymore. He couldn't hold large gatherings. He could only draw numbers up on the internet, which is kind of like impersonal. And people who don't want Donald Trump in office after November 5th, they might get a wake-up call, because with this stay-at-home order in about 48 of the states, he's probably going to have a really, really good chance of winning again. Like, certain elements of our communication have died down. Don, could you take that theory or question, or Wade?
Well, Bernie Sanders, he is 300 delegates behind. He realized the reality. And so he had to save some money, because he might make another run in 24. And you've got to have a campaign chest for that. But, you know, in terms of Hollywood, you have to have those powerful people. And that's you're talking about John Travolta and who is the other, who is the guy?
Sean Penn?
No, the
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise and
Tom Cruise isn't really that involved with politics.
But he's very involved in Hollywood. You know,
okay.
Well, did you guys know that Clint Eastwood unendorsed Donald Trump now? Like, he withdrew any type of support for him?
No, that's a good thing, because essentially Clint Eastwood was all about the Second Amendment, but everything else, he was not necessarily behind Donald Trump in the first place.
Yeah, I think he was behind more traditional Republicans in the past.
Exactly.
But this one thing I want to mention is people like Angelina and Brad Pitt, before they broke up, they had, and Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher before they broke up, they both had nonprofits that were supporting stopping sexual trafficking. So the theme of this show tonight is breaking the myths of the QAnon. So if people in Hollywood were sinking millions of dollars into stopping sexual trafficking, why does John say that only Hollywood is promoting these types of things?
Well, it's not just Hollywood. Dan and Wade worked for Disney. Walt Disney was one of the biggest pedophiles there was early on.
Think Walt Disney was.
Yes, he was. Well, he was alleged to be, let me put it like that. But the Disney company has higher suicide rates within their institutions than they had, the highest suicide rates in their institution than any company in the world for a long time, because of their low pay and their
overworking?
Their demands on their workers. Yeah. The suicide rate at Disneyland, Disney World.
Okay, I'm going to look that up while I'm talking, because I hope you're not generalizing.
And this is the first time I've heard this, actually.
Yeah,
I think you got the wrong company, Don. Nothing personal.
Yeah. Judy
Garland got drugged doesn't mean that Walt Disney was that type of person.
I've never heard that either.
Well, entertainment too. I mean, you're attracting. It's a business that attracts people that have these big dreams of, you know, being famous and you know, it'll attract a lot of people that are fairly narcissistic. Not all of them, right? And it'll attract artistic types and very emotional people are magnetized to that. And these kinds of people are the kinds of people that commit suicide.
Well,
Don's actually, there is talk about it on the internet. It said Walt Disney was a known pedophile and a 33-degree Freemason. And then I'm not going to talk about the rest because it's too depressing.
Well, the thing is that when you included, and I hadn't finished, when you included Disney France and there was another Disney over in Europe, combined, the suicide rate in the Disney Corporation was the highest for a long time, for a while, the highest in institutions.
Okay.
Okay, well, all I know is I can't really tackle that subject tonight because, honestly, I don't know anything about it. But
well,
if it was true, it's depressing.
Well,
yeah.
When you talk about the salaries, then this is what Daniel and Wade know about. What about the Disney salaries as compared to other
I can talk about
Hollywood
that.
Entertainment salaries?
So are you saying people like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera were underpaid in the Disney
no,
club?
I can certainly talk about that with regard to just like a frontline cast member, you know, someone who is maybe perhaps in the costume department or just doing food or whatnot. I would venture to say that this is very much true with anywhere else, like a Starbucks or McDonald's or any of those kind of entry-level jobs. Disney is a little bit different because they're unique, but with regard to Disney, when you first start off, it's not about the pay, it's about the perks. So really, if one should be some kind of Disney fan, I would venture to say to work for them because you get things like free access to the theme parks. You get crazy discounts on their food and merchandise. You do get benefits after a certain amount of time. But just like any other company, as you work your way up, you know, you will be paid. You will get paid what you're worth. They have to remain competitive in the industry. Disney knows just as anyone else that you can leave the door and go and work for GM. You know, so for sure. I mean, so that's my take on salary.
Okay.
Pretty normal for the time and for the, you know, we were entry level jobs and it was not great, but it was normal.
And
LA have a minimum wage of $15.
So
if you're working at the El Capitan Theater, you'll be getting $15 an hour.
Well, I have something to say about Disneyland. When I was working at Disneyland, I was hired into attractions, and basically what they tell you is you're going to be working in this attraction. They don't really tell you you can't work anywhere else. So along with attractions, there's guest control. Well, guest control had a lot of shifts. Had I not gone out and sought out those shifts, I would not have gotten them. So, I will say this across the board with the Walt Disney Company. If you are smart and creative, you can get more hours. You just have to go after it. More hours equals more pay. So there's a business side to it, too, like anything else.
So I have a question, Daniel. Was that while you were right in Disneyland? Like, you're working at one attraction, and then you walk across the theme park and ask to work at another?
No, not at all. So, for example, if I scheduled on Autopia, I would work the entire shift of Autopia. If I were to work Space Mountain or Guest Control, those are separate shifts on separate days.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just got confused.
No, I'm sorry, for sure.
Yeah, by the way, you guys, I was scanning around the internet while you all were talking, and a lot of this Walt Disney Freemason and suspected pedophile, the Illuminati, you know, like conspiracy theories are behind some of this stuff. So that's something I definitely have to look into. I don't have the right to diss a person's character on the air without knowing anything.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sure.
I kind of want to drop that subject now, Don, even though you opened up Pandora's box.
That's fine. That's fine. That's what I heard. That's alleged. And I've been to Disneyland multitudes of times. And, I've just heard these things through the grapevine.
Right.
Well,
sure.
So there is some truth to it because I'm not saying he's guilty, but there is things circulating that have been circulating for a long time.
Well,
Daniel
and Wade mentioned that Fantasia was one of the greatest movies ever made, and they're right in terms of the greatest automated movie probably ever made.
Oh, I have to clarify something. So first off, you're right. Fantasia is one of the best films ever created, in my opinion. However, what I was referring to earlier in the conversation is a show with a similar name called Fantasmic. This is a nighttime spectacular, both on the rivers of America at Disneyland and at Disney's Hollywood Studios out here in Florida. And just check out a YouTube video of it. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say on that.
Well, I'm sure that it was made out of the same ilk, but when you look at it, Fantasia, anyway, it has sorcerers and witchcraft, and the whole movie was about things from magic, Satan, things like that that really can be destructive as it can be entertaining. And that's what I'm talking about.
It's fantasy. I mean, these are the kind of the icons of fantasy.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at this video while you guys were talking, and they showed some of the Freemason symbolism on some of the Disney postcards and property. But I mean, and then Walt Disney's signature, he had a lot of curly type letters. Somebody depicted that there was 666 in his handwriting, just in the name Walt Disney. So I think people just try to go too far with this kind of stuff. That's just
They're looking for it. Well, I remember when I was 10 years old and I first saw Fantasia, the first thought in my mind was not to go worship Satan.
I just thought it was a cute show. Is that the one where water pours everywhere and he's trying to clean up the water?
Yeah. Well,
I wasn't thinking of Satan. I just liked the graphic.
He's referring to the Chernobog scene toward the end of the Fantasia is quite long. There's a scene that plays to the song classical music piece Not on Bald Mountain, and there's a character called the Chernobog who is not Satan, who looks maybe arguably a lot like Satan, and right after that there's Ave Maria, which I believe is quite the Christian theme with nuns walking through the forest.
Yes.
So,
and he was the bad
anyhow.
Guy.
I'm sorry.
And he's defeated in the end. Well, the Chernobog
is evil.
I mean, you're supposed to see him as evil, and he gets defeated in the end. So he's not, you know, they weren't like, oh, this is cool, you should worship devils. That wasn't the message, exactly.
Well, Mickey was dressed in his magic outfit pretty much the whole movie, if you're talking about Fantasia. But,
symbolism, sun and moon. I don't think there's nothing wrong with it, but I do notice some early cartoons, even Warner Brothers, they were kind of violent.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Brothers Grimm, the whole set of Brothers Grimm stories, they're some of the most, I don't want to say detestable, but they were very grim, if you want to talk about it.
Hansel and Gretel, like somebody wanted to eat them and put them in an oven.
So what's the point of bringing all this up? I don't understand. So it's Edgar Allan Poe.
The main reason we brought it up, I didn't know Don was going to bring up Walt Disney, but the main reason is because my friend who's into the QAnon theory, he thinks that the QAnon followers believe that there's a deep state. And that part of the connection of the deep state is Hollywood power players that are hooking up with Washington, D.C. senators, and they're moving a fast-forward agenda into child exploitation and basically things that are ungodly. So what I was trying to say is that my friend who's into QAnon theory takes things to the extreme, like, there's a lot of good that came out of Hollywood as well as bad. It influenced my mom and my sister became a professional actress, Nancy, and that Shirley Temple Black had a great career and she ended up becoming a United States ambassador. Like, but my main point in bringing it up initially is that not all of Hollywood is bad.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And Hollywood, for the most part, I mean, you have to, there's a big business to it too. I mean, if it was all about child exploitation and these themes that you're talking about, I don't know. I question the business part of it as far as if that was just the only thing that they were after. And also, I don't think that they would be around very long. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right, and my main point is that the premise, people go into acting and producing and writing because they have passions. They're trying to be good at something. People aren't going into those fields for sinister reasons. Just like last election cycle, some of the squad, like three out of those four women were underdogs before they got elected, and now all the conservatives on the right are like condemning these minority women for being in public office and not being of the same faith as them. So what I'm just saying is like the glass half
like
empty
views,
versus
though.
Half full.
Sure.
What, Wade?
But the squad, though, there's a lot of arguments against the positions they're holding. A lot of them take on socialist positions. So a lot of the criticism is not because, you know, how dare they be minority women in these positions. There are criticisms about the positions they take on things.
And I have no problem with
not,
that, as long as they're not attacking their character all the time.
Not attacking their... what do you mean by character?
Like, for example, like, some of those... Two out of the four squad members, and we're talking about Ilhan Omar, the Palestinian representative from Michigan. There's another black lady from Missouri or somewhere. Like, it's okay. Yeah. If they're promoting their ideas, it's okay. But I'm saying, like, Donald Trump made a comment right when they started getting popular, he basically said their role in Congress was illegitimate and they needed to change their hairstyle or something. I can't remember exactly what he said.
Yes.
Like, you shouldn't condemn their character, but if you want to condemn their policies and what they stand for, then it just means that you're disagreeing with them, and that's okay.
Well, hairstyle's superficial, and yeah, Trump says a lot of silly, you know, the old child school bantering, which probably is not very helpful. You know, the hairstyle don't matter. You know, if you think they're doing something by character, if you think they're doing something like unethical, like, you know, that. But of course, I mean, you know, people point out a lot of unethical things Trump has done in his past too. So, you know, I think the important thing
he doesn't seem to suffer consequences for it though.
Yeah.
He knows
how
to.
Because he fires everyone who would instill those consequences.
Right. Yeah. And, like, let me just give you an example. Like, I can't think of it right now. Don, can you help me out here? Well, for example, Ilhan Omar is the Minneapolis Muslim woman from Somalia. She got divorced from the father of her kids, which is unusual for a Muslim. And she married her white campaign manager. And certain people on the conservative party, whether it was Sean Hannity or whatever, were criticizing her, and they're going to downgrade her as far as they can, hoping she'll lose her seat. You know, just stuff like that. I can't think of anything specific right now.
Yeah, but the husband that she divorced was apparently her brother, who was deep.
No, that was the first. So that, okay, it's a rumor, Don. She supposedly married her brother so he could come to the U.S., but that's not the guy she was married to. Her real marriage was to a real, like, boyfriend lover who she had kids with. But John did that research, too, and he said that he insisted that she married her brother to come over here, but there's no proof.
There's no proof, but there's a lot of innuendo about that. And that's one of the things that, you know, Trump jumped on. But, you know, you've got places like, I believe it's Philadelphia, they had elections back in 2000 and I believe it was 13, where there was a Muslim group. There were a couple of Muslim politicians who were ready to win their elections, and the county or someplace in the parties, whatever part the government that controlled those districts, didn't allow them to run. And that's completely un-American. So that, you know,
you mean like they wouldn't even let them get on the ballot? And
right.
if they were running, their name didn't show up on the ballot.
Oh, yeah, that's not democratic, yeah.
Well, you guys, I don't know how long you guys can stay on the air tonight, but I promised Don it was only going to be a 75-minute show, so I just want everybody to go around and comment on my last question. So
sure.
With this COVID virus, realistically, Minnesota is, like, on May 4th, supposedly we can go back into full swing, go to restaurants, go back to work, but it might get delayed. So how do you guys think this is going to affect the next 6 months of living in our country, including the presidential election? Does anyone have a direct comment?
Who do you want to go first?
Anybody.
Okay, I could go. I think
okay,
we can get back
Wade,
to work.
Wade, you can go
soon.
First
like,
and Dan second.
Sure, everybody is hesitating, so let's just get the ball rolling, right? I think we can get back into gear and let's get this economy going again. And people just, we don't need a whole government centralized plan to fix things. We need just people to get out of the way and let creative people,
mm-hmm.
like Daniel's got things that he wants to do. I've got things I want to do. Let people
mm-hmm.
do them. And we'll get busy, and it's people doing
mm-hmm.
useful things. That's what makes a good economy, am I right?
Wait, I have a question for you since you talk on this topic frequently. How much control do you think the state government should have about people regarding stay-at-home orders? And do you think the state
mm-hmm.
should bail out every single person who temporarily lost their job?
Oh,
go ahead, Wade.
I don't know if they could afford to bail out. I mean, well, if okay, I think Ben Shapiro had made a good point. I'm listening to different opinions. I think he made a good point that if the state is going to force people to stay home, which I'm not sure that's what they should do. I think that may be too drastic. Like, you know, we don't need police standing at your door. Just tell people, hey, it's a good idea to stay home. You know, we don't need police patrolling people's houses and tackling them if they go outside. But if you are going to enforce a stay-at-home rule, then like Ben Shapiro pointed out, if you're going to enforce that and you're going to be – if the government's going to be the cause for people losing their jobs, then they should bail them out and they should help them. And I think
right,
that's, that is a
good point. Right,
because
they're forcing them to stay
yeah.
home.
Yeah.
But let me just give you guys a quick nutshell before Daniel goes. Minnesota has had, I think, around 14,000 cases, maybe not that much. 785 people survived, including a 104-year-old woman who had it. Only 64 people died, and there's 5 million people in our state. And they say it's going to peak on April 28th. So by the time the government lifts the state order on May 4th, then they can't predict if there's going to be a second wave of peak cases, but we've managed it in our state so that not one of our hospitals is overwhelmed or they're not short on beds or supplies. So that's just one example. So with
sure.
that illustration, why
well,
don't you go, Daniel, with what you think is going to happen the next 6 months?
Well, that's really enlightening, Jane, what you said. And I think it's my understanding you folks receive snow quite a bit, and you're making through it even in the cold weather, huh?
Yeah, we are. And by the way, cold weather is a more conducive environment for the coronavirus to spread. The average temperature it spreads in is 47 degrees.
Oh,
I love your details throughout the show. It's awesome. So, anyhow, I have a lot to say about the coronavirus. What I will say is I think that, with regard to humanity and the economy, we are forever changed. I think that this is a scar on the entire world, and I think that as far as how the economy is going to move forward once laws are lifted and whatnot, I think that, I hate to use Disney as an example, Robert Iger was suggesting that maybe we might be taking guest temperatures when they come into the parks, so whether or not that's going to happen is anyone's guess. But I think that, and also not that the stock market is a direct reflection of the economy, because it's not. It's kind of its own thing. And yes, about 3 weeks ago or so, the stock market hit an all-time low. It's very true, but it is on the up and up. It is rising. Why do I think it's rising? The stock market likes to look at the future, but and react as such. What I will say is that I think that the economy has adjusted in a way. We're kind of in a new economy, right? I mean, I'm still able to go to a restaurant. It's takeout, but I'm still able to go to a restaurant. I'm still able to shop. When I go to Trader Joe's, I have to wait in a line because they're only allowing a certain amount of people through the door. This is what I mean. It's still an economy, but it's a different economy. As well, talking about the internet online, I would venture to say, and I don't have hardcore numbers, but, why not? I mean, Amazon business or delivery, Uber Eats, things like this, more than likely, booming. Look at the toilet paper industry. Absolutely booming. They can't keep it on the shelves, So the economy has shifted a little bit.
Including Clorox wipes.
For sure. Does that answer your question? I feel either there was a political...
Yeah, I think you did a really good job of articulating the shifts, because yes,
okay.
For example, I've gone and gotten cream cheese wontons 3 times in the last 2 weeks, so I've improved the Chinese food business around here. But,
right.
Right, and I can go to any, literally Minnesota has hardly any restrictions on restaurants, even Arby's, where my son works. It's not even that popular of a restaurant. He's working 4 nights a week, and he's pretty lucky to still have a job, because both him and I both retained our jobs during this crisis. So I'd probably feel a lot different if my whole world was turned upside down. So, Don, why don't you finish commenting, being the fact that you're at a stay-at-home job at the moment. Oh, go ahead, Daniel,
right?
If you weren't finished.
Oh, I just have one other kind of point on this, is that just today, it seems like there are a number of videos, at least around Facebook, circulating around, that people are going to hospitals. There was one video where in the video there are several people going to several different hospitals around the world trying to videotape workers there, and it turns out that these hospitals are absolutely empty. So that
I did see that about a European hospital. That
yeah,
there was
so,
some kind of fake news in Germany and one of the Netherlands, or in the Netherlands or Holland.
That they're trying to debunk the news, right?
Right. They're trying to say that it's not as bad as the media is making it sound. But I do know that in Louisiana, they're doing terrible down there. And,
wow.
One of the nurses in one of the Ninth Ward died today in the poorer side of town. So I know there's some places that really are affected, but like John said, if you're not 90 years old, you're probably not going to die from it. And the numbers
so far are
pretty high for survival.
Don,
what's your conclusion?
The government overreacting with regard to the stay-at-home order, for kind of going off what Wade said. Go on, John, sorry.
I think it's overboard, too. But then,
yeah,
on the other hand, it's making a lot of people really paranoid. Like, my boss wouldn't let me go to the store for the clients for something they really needed. Instead, she made me wait several days, and then they ended up ordering it online. So it's just making a lot of people super paranoid.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Don.
Well, okay. Now, in terms of the healthcare, I'll mention that first, since that was the most recent topic. There are certain hospitals in certain areas that are overwhelmed. Make no mistake about it. They are not able to get in regular emergencies, much less, continue their work on the patients with corona, with COVID, who are in their rooms. Now, the other side of the coin is that I'm in Nevada, and we should have a tremendous amount of people, but we don't, because of the care that our governor has taken to lock down everything, including all the casinos. If you can imagine the revenue,
the money
lost. The casinos are completely locked down.
Oh,
so
God.
We have one of the lowest amount of patients and deaths in the entire country. The only reason that we are in a lockdown is basically to continue our vigilance on the virus so that we do keep it
right.
But that
makes a lot of sense.
Oh, when you look at the strip, pictures of the Las Vegas strip, it's unbelievable that there's hardly anyone walking the strip. And if you've ever seen pictures of it, you know that that's not a normal thing.
But both Gwen and I have been to Las Vegas several times. It's a very, very much a beloved city in my heart. I grew up going to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents took me a lot. It's just, it's really disheartening. You know, Cirque du Soleil and Magic, and, you know, I don't go for the gambling. I don't gamble. I feel if you're going to give your money, you should get something back. But, you know, I go for the food and the entertainment, you know, and just the hotels are gorgeous. And, so it's just very disheartening. It's very sad to hear that.
Well, when you realize that everybody that you're performing magic or having your act in front of gambles, virtually everyone there gambles, then
well, sure.
You can imagine that everyone that you're in front of or that your company is performing for is a gambler, then you'll realize that no one is on the strip or anywhere near the strip at this time. But one of the things that I wanted to mention again, I've mentioned it often, is the economics of it all. When you're a business person, which I'm a small businessman, and I understood the challenges of being a business person. And I understand
mm-hmm.
there are booms and there are busts, there are downturns.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are not providing for the, saving or developing strategies for emergencies for the downturns, then you don't need to be in business. And so we don't need $500 billion bailout for companies that have made profits on us for so long, and given dividends to the shareholders, and have CEOs who are making billions of dollars a year.
They did say that on the internet, Don. That they said that companies can borrow; they don't have to take a government package.
They easily can borrow. They can easily pay it back. It happened in the 2011 bailout, 2009 bailout. Those companies were given money that they said they didn't even need it. The banks didn't even need it. They were given it, and they paid it back with interest. But we had, and I've gone over this many times. They had four QEs, one TARP and three QEs. And all that money, $1.5 trillion, $1.5 trillion, went up in smoke. So that means that these companies, these corporations, are getting money that is not even they can't even find it.
I'm sorry. I know what QE is, quantitative easing. That's printing more money. But what is TARP? I'm not familiar.
TARP was the first
question. TARP is a term for a limitation on funds, but it was a coordinated effort to give the top 10 banks in America money.
Okay.
I forgot what it stands for, but I can
no,
look it
up
quick while Don's talking.
Sure.
But,
go ahead, Don.
No, I mean, these corporations.
Troubled Asset Relief Program. It stood for Troubled Asset Relief Program that was signed into law by Bush in October of 2008.
And the banks who got it, Wells Fargo, I believe the Bank of America, they didn't even want it.
Right. Wells Fargo was one of them that didn't need it.
They didn't even need it. And they were forced to take this money so that they could pay it back and that they can be all inclusive in, you know, saying that everyone was going to be involved, you know, in this TARP. I call it a budgetary scam. And then there were three other QEs, qualitative easings, that came about. That is, you know, the same thing that this $500 billion additional bailout money is just like. And these, you know, these are white and Jewish, you know, companies that don't need it. They're getting welfare, and they can't, you know. And I'll just mention this really, really quick. And they can't give reparations to ex-slaves families. So this is something that is totally unfair to everyone in the country who has to, you know, ultimately it's the person, regular individual, who's paying for all of this. And it's totally unfair for us to continue to be paying for regular profits and then have to pay for qualitative easing or welfare, additional welfare. So this is a scam. This is a readjustment of the country's finances, and the regular people like you and me, if we're not the part of the 1%, we're getting ripped off again. So that's pretty much what I want people to know, is that all of this bailout stuff is completely unnecessary and for Trump friends and those people who are oligarchs who run the country. We don't need that money.
Oh, sure. Trump wants the vote again. For sure.
Well, that's the thing about the November election. There very easily could be a delay in the election. And so Trump will be able to stay in. He might be able to work something out where he is going to be dictator for life. And that is going to be completely against the Democratic philosophy. And our Democratic experiment could easily take a turn towards dictatorship. Like you mentioned earlier, Dan, that, you know, he was friends with all of these dictators who were, you know, fascists, and they just want to kill, you know, they want to take over their countries as an individual.
Well, let's cross fingers and, you know, let's not cross that bridge till we get there, I'd say.
Well,
yeah, if he does try to, you know, claim himself as dictator and say we're no longer having elections. So I will be very against that. But it is something that's always been suspect. Like every president, people are like, they were saying that about Obama, that he was going to not leave office too. So, you know, they'll be bad. We'll just make sure that they don't pull a Julius Caesar on us, any of them. Or Augustus.
There is a difference between Donald Trump having meetings with people like Kim Jong-un and, you know, and doing the kind of very dictatorship kinds of leadership that he's doing, as opposed to what how Barack Obama led the country. Two very, very different ways of doing things. So I would venture to say that the threat of Donald Trump becoming a dictator is perhaps a little bit higher than Barack Obama.
Well, absolutely. You're not going to hear Barack Obama say that he's in love with Kim Jong-un. And in fact, he had an adversarial, like Trump did. Trump has said he and Jong-un had a love affair. And he was always pandering to Putin, whatever he wanted for long. You know, and you know, there are other dictators around the world that Trump had, you know, quote unquote affairs with, and this is just something that we have to be. I'm just saying to people, watch out, be vigilant, be careful, because we're on a very slippery slope. And we could lose system, democratic republic system, that very, very easily in the next 6 months.
Well, one thing we do have going for us is that Trump is not the, you know, he's not the brightest, you know, he's not, what is the saying? He's not the brightest card in the pack, or the brightest light bulb in the bunch, whatever it is, you know. So I don't know.
But
so many things he sets out to do, he fails at. So, I mean,
have you known any dictators that have been overly intelligent? I don't really remember one. Not Hitler.
Have I known any Mussolini? What now?
I haven't known any. Who were overly intelligent. They had charisma, but they weren't real smart.
That's what I'm saying. Trump is not very—he's not very bright.
Right, but those are the ones with charisma who have been able to take over.
We do have to wrap this up, but I'm going to pose a question for next week's shows for our returning guests. That. Are we wards of our own state, or are we individuals? So we can tackle that topic next week. So Daniel. We always appreciate your insight, and I'll try to get on your YouTube channel, which I'll repeat, Magical BTS. Is that
the blog. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's the YouTube.
What is your YouTube name? Like, what is your URL for your YouTube?
So here's the deal with that. In order for you to get what you're referring to, perhaps, is a custom URL with YouTube, you have to be, I think you either have to be with YouTube for a certain amount of time or have a certain amount of followers. It's a very, very new channel, but an easy access is just to go to Bazaar.
Well, I've been there on there a long time.
I have not though. I don't have the option to change my URL to be custom. It's like YouTube.com/XY123AB43. You know, it's not custom yet. So, but what I'm suggesting here is a very easy way to get to my YouTube channel. Is to go to my website, pizzaria.com, PeterAZZebraZZebraARRobertIA.com. Scroll down a bit, and toward the top, you'll see the Magical BTS graphic there, and there should be even a YouTube video there. So if you click on that, you'll be able to be taken right to it. That's the easiest way right now.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I figured I could go to your website and click on a link, but I haven't ever tried to change my YouTube name. And it's, even though I post all my a lot of my radio shows on there, the name of my YouTube account has no affiliation with my radio show. But with that, we're going to end the show. Thanks for joining us, Wade and Don, and everybody have the rest of a nice holiday. I'm going to close the show with a song. Wade and I will visit you someday.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, guys.
We can have that discussion.
I'm going to post the link of the show probably within an hour to Facebook, so You can share it, Daniel.
Perfect. I look forward.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I look forward to that. Perfect.
All right.
Nice
good night, everybody.
Pleasure.
Good night.
Later, Wade. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.